this is Jeff Stana from Americans in France, and I am talking with Mary Jo Delaney. Mary Jo, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And where are you, Mary Jo?
I'm in beautiful Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat in southern France, situated between Villefranche, Nice, and Monaco.
That's on the Mediterranean Sea, isn't it?
30-second walk away.
What brought you there?
Oh, luck. Pure luck. It's funny because, you know, I've always wanted to live in Paris, and I did live in Paris, lived in Paris almost 8 years. When I first vacationed, before I lived in France, before I had the right to live in France, because I was an American with only an American passport at the time, I was vacationing, and of course I ended up in southern France, and I just fell in love, as so many people do. And a friend of mine said to me, you know, Mary Jo, it's a lot different than being on vacation and living here. And I thought, don't discourage me, you know. And then I went back to America for years, and eventually I got a job in Germany. I wasn't there. I lived in Germany for 8 years. I lived in Paris for 8 years. And as it turned out, when my company downsized, quote-unquote, during the dot-com crisis, I said, okay, I got to get out of Paris. For some crazy reason, I thought it would be cheaper in southern France.
That's what I thought, too, but it's not.
No. But I did have a very dear friend and her husband living here. Their family was like family to me. You know, obviously, when people leave the States, I think that two things they miss the most is their own humor and their family, you know, family and friends. That's what I found. And I at least have family and friends, my French family, down here, and so I chose here. And, you know, this led to that. I've been here for, I think, 9 years now. And as a matter of fact, the man that I ended up falling in love with is situated in Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat. I was originally in Nice.
And how long have you been living in France for?
Yes, about 17 years. You know, you never think you're going to stay forever, do you?
No, you never do, but then you do. It's like you do stay. Tell me about how you got your visa for France, to live in France, and can you work also in France?
It's an interesting story because, you know, the first time I came over here, I was still in university working my master's in Western Massachusetts, the University of Massachusetts. And it was wonderful because I'd have 2 months off in the summer. So I would take 6 weeks, and I'd come over to Europe. It was back in the 80s when the dollar was high, really high. What you do a lot when you're traveling around Europe is you take the trains. Remember that, you know, it's very rare even that I see young people on trains like it used to be back in those days. I remember sleeping on train floors. And some guy in that compartment said, well, you know, you can have an Irish passport. And we weren't yet the European community. Not yet. It was about 3 years before. And I said, what are you talking about? If you have grandparents that come from Ireland, you can have an Irish passport. I said, no way. Well, sure enough, I went back to the States after that vacation, and it took me a good year to get that citizenship. First, you got to get the citizenship, and then you can apply for the passport. It was a long process, but I got my Irish passport, and that's how I can live and work in Europe. I am a member of the European community.
And what do you do?
I've worked for a newspaper. You know how rare and far between you have the English-British newspapers. I was lucky enough to work for a wonderful one for 5 years. In Paris, I worked for a very large advertising company that was called Publicis. When I left America, I didn't come to France first. I came to Germany. Why? Because I couldn't get a job in France. And I wasn't going to just come over here and bum around. I had done that earlier in my vacation years. I got a very good job coming over into Germany. And I worked very hard. Because I lost that job, I had enough savings. I went to France. And God bless the French. They retrained me. I took computer courses for a year.
Was it difficult to find a job in France?
Take this year course, you have to get a stage. That was difficult. And right down to the last week, I thought, my goose is cooked. And it just so happens, you know, I got a call back, and it was living hell. It was. This was a company of, at the beginning, it was a company of about 80 people. They worked together, I think, for 7 years, and all French.
Right.
I was the only English-speaking person there. There was a Canadian woman who was the head of the place. And then we merged. Then Publicis bought us, and we became bigger. And then it was me, another American man, a Brazilian, and the Canadian. Everyone else was French. So, you know, I paid my dues. And, of course, in the end, it turned out to be wonderful. But it's not easy. It's not easy entering into an entire French world and being accepted and understanding. their culture, their way of being, the way of...
What was difficult about working in a French company?
The tardiness, the laissez-faire attitude was very difficult for me. You'd show up for a meeting at 10 o'clock, everybody else would be there at 10:15, then they have to have a coffee and a smoke first. Also, I found, which I've come, I can see both sides of it, but no one ever takes responsibility for anything. Nothing is ever anyone's fault, you know? You just have to learn that. In some ways, I think it's good, actually. I've learned, it's not blame, what's the point? What's the sense? But at the beginning, in a work environment, it's extremely difficult. No one takes responsibility for their actions or their mistakes. I mean, blame is a hard word. I'm just thinking about, you know, taking responsibility. It's just not the way the French works, not their culture, which is interesting. As a matter of fact, I think it's a good thing. I've come around to it. I think it's fascinating. A wonderful thing. One of the many wonderful things I've learned living with the French. Yeah.
You mean not to take responsibility or?
No, I think, I take my own personal responsibility about things. I think that's very, very important in life in general. But I'm saying when you're in a work situation or any kind of a social situation, you try your very best to gracefully avoid blame. French, for example, they're not a big apologizers, although some can be. But if someone doesn't turn around and say, listen, I stepped on your foot, I'm sorry, or whatever it may be. French, it's just not their culture. It's just not. Although many people have shocked me and turned around and said, I'm so terribly sorry. And I think they're also very polite. And I think they let more things just go. Whereas the Americans, I think more and more, when I go back to America, I'm shocked at how really on each other they are. You know, you've infiltrated my right in some way. How dare you do that? Whereas the French are just kind of like, okay, you had an affair with my wife. Okay. Now you hit my car. Okay.
No, I've noticed the same thing, too. They're very much let live.
Live and let live. And sometimes it can be very frustrating when you're on the side that doesn't appreciate that. But on the other hand, I do think it's a very good lesson. I guess I was wrong when I said to not take responsibility. That's something apart, you know. And, of course, I think the French, in some ways, are a very kind of new age and spiritual. And but I'm just saying culturally, they don't assign blame. It's a big no-no.
When you came here, you had a good grasp of the language then?
Not really, because I had lived in Germany for 8 years before. And, I think if you talk to anybody who's trilingual, they'll tell you it's not going between the English and the French or the English and the German. It's going between, you want to speak French and German's coming out of your mouth. And you can see it in people's eyes. They're looking at you like, what are you talking about? You think you're speaking French, but you're speaking German, because you're so... And I remember before I first came to Paris, I went into a store, I bought a pair of shoes, and the person was so nice, and I walk out, and I made my purchase, and I'm walking out the door, and the guy says to me, and I was speaking French. I was speaking French to him, but with a German accent. And the guy says to me, Auf Wiedersehen.
He thought you were German. That's funny.
Everybody thought I was German when I moved to French. It's funny because the Germans thought I was French. Although now I'm sure I sound quite American. Down here in southern France, we have it's kind of a shame in a way. But it's such a large international English-speaking society here. Very, very international. It's strange to be put in a situation where you just are forced to speak French. I get to experience three or four different cultures down here. And now, of course, the new infiltration over the last few years has been the, choose to guess?
The Russians.
The Russians.
How about Chinese?
No, not yet. No, but the Russians are here. You will drive on the one road between where I live and Monaco, and you will see billboards with Russian.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's very, very Russian, especially where I am. I'm in the rich town. I'm in the, it's a village. Don't mistake that I'm a wealthy person. It's a village. But, you go up all around. It's all blocked off dealers. I live in the Beverly Hills of France. And it used to, when I first came here, I'd come here for an afternoon to walk around, what have you, what a pretty little village. It was mostly Italian, Middle Eastern, Lebanese, and the Russians just came kind of on an onslaught. Many of the my friends were also English teachers. They've gone away with girlfriends. She spent the summer in St. Petersburg to improve her Russian, So it's fascinating. It's really fascinating. I love living here for the international culture.
Give me an idea of again where you live.
It's where the infamous To Catch a Thief was filmed, the last scene when they're on the rooftop. It's a mansion. It's a villa just as you're coming into Saint-Jean Cap-Ferrat. It's very, very small, 1,200, something like that, but a very, very small. So we're really between Nice and Monaco, equidistant, 20 minutes each way. Flat in the middle, step out in the ocean.
What about the local specialties?
Yeah, the local specialties come from, you know, really a very short time ago, 50, 60 years ago, when this was a very impoverished area, and it was just all about fishermen who sold most of what they caught. There was nothing here, nothing. It was very, very poor. So they have, you know, local fish soups. They have a lot of things made from chickpeas. There's something called succa. They have local vegetables, which they grow here, and they stuff them. So they, the farci niçoise is very, very famous. You know, they use, of course, you know, lardon and things like that. Yeah, inexpensive food is a tradition of the area because it was so poor. Just 60 years ago.
True, because I live in the Alps, and before skiing came in, there wasn't, you know, in the villages, they were pretty, in the mountains, there was cows, and they made their cheese.
Exactly. What do you think? Post-World War, too. How it wasn't as devastated as some of the other places, I guess, in Europe, but, yeah, France was pretty devastated.
Do you ever swim in the ocean? Or the sea, I should say, the Mediterranean Sea?
Well, not with my broken arm, but usually every day.
Usually every day?
Yeah, you gotta stop around October. It gets a little bit too cold. Actually, last year you could swim until November. It was really that nice. But of course, it's tough to get in May. And they have such a beautiful, beautiful pool in Monaco that we take the motorcycle. We go to the pool. It costs almost nothing. I think it costs you €1.20 every time you go in.
What are the beaches like along the Mediterranean?
Yeah, the beaches vary. You know, they got those rocky beaches which stink. Nobody likes those rocky beaches. They hurt your feet. But if you go a little bit in the direction of Cannes, in the other direction, then they'll have all those lovely sandy beaches, you know, which goes all the way out to Saint-Tropez, Saint-Maxime. That's where people really go to vacation. That's where they have the sand.
What's it like teaching English in France?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's glorious. It's just glorious.
Difficult to find a job?
The problem in teaching now, I think all teachers will agree, is that, you know, it's like anything. Everybody thinks they're a teacher, and, you know, they're not. But it's all become business, cutting back. So you have anybody coming in who's willing to take a very bad salary, who's not necessarily trained to be a real teacher. Education involves more than knowing two languages. But I've been lucky. I've been very lucky, and I teach mostly adults, and they are, each and every one of them, hilarious, fabulous, wonderful, incorrigible, and we have so much fun. I teach, I will tell you, entertainment, and the language is kind of secondary. You've got to entertain people, or they just they're not gonna learn, in my opinion. If you have someone who's going to take an examination, if you have someone that you're tutoring one-on-one because they've got to pass an exam, that's something else. You're just banging it out. You're working together. You try the best you can. But if you've got a group of 13 adults between 10 and 1 o'clock, you better be sure that you've got something that's going to make them laugh and learn at the same time. I've been teaching on and off for 12 years. You're always learning. The wonderful thing about teaching is you're always learning. It's one of those jobs that is exhausting, but you love it. It drains you, and it also gives you energy. And I was writing for many years. I was writing for a newspaper. I was writing for, you know, PR for different companies, private companies, what have you. And it's very lonely. You know, it's good work. I like to write. It's what I do well. But it's lonely behind your computer. Very lonely. Whereas you get out there and you teach a class, and I feel like a star. Let's face it, I'm never going to be, in a production of Hamlet in London. The only acting I'm going to get to do anymore, or entertaining, or is through teaching. And you have to be an entertainer now, I think, if you want to teach well. Everything is audiovisual, and people are busy. They have busy lives, and they're not going to go home and open up their workbook and conjugate their verbs. You're going to have to find another way to make them want it and feel good about themselves.
Are you able to do it full-time, or is it a part-time job?
Well, you know, teaching English, you're maxed full-time at 30 hours anyway because you have so much preparation time and after time. So I would say it's more or less full-time, although technically I'm part-time.
Do you have a suggestion or suggestions for anybody who's thinking of moving to France?
Be sure you've got a way to earn a living. It's no fun being a fugitive. It's no fun living under the radar. Used to be you could get away with that stuff. No more. So either find something where you can absolutely target a company and you know the steps you're going to take to be able to get at least a temporary visa, you know, that might lead to another. Or see if it's still possible to get some kind of a, I think you can still get Irish citizenship. If you have a grandmother or a grandfather, or both in my case, who came from Ireland, I think it's still possible for the Greeks and maybe even the Italians. But there are ways. If you have to take a part-time job and be a part-time student, you get a student visa for a year. But don't just think you can come on over and, hey, because you can't.
What are some of the things you don't like about France?
It's not so much what I don't like about France. It's just the things that I miss about home. So you miss your family. Things happen. And abroad, I mean, I have one remaining parent, and it's very difficult to be away from a parent when they're going through a poor health period or what have you. I miss the humor of your own country. You know, everybody be sitting around dinner table laughing because it's something cultural. Sometimes I get it, usually I don't. And I've been here for a long, long time. Most of the humor you get is laughing at yourself, not understanding, but you miss that real humor, those belly laughs. And you know they're going on out there in the world and you're not part of them. That's it.
Okay, Mary Jo, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, too.